Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The American voter has had their confidence shaken in the integrity and accuracy of our elections. Repeated investigations into allegations of voter fraud and other chicanery have come up empty. There is no credible proof that should result in anyone hesitating to believe that our elections are free, accurate, and fair, and yet mis- and disinformation and outright lies about the process persist. Following the 2020 election, which Donald Trump continues to insist was rigged and stolen from him, exhaustive investigations were conducted. They revealed no major problems with that election. In this election cycle, Donald Trump won, and there were no accusations of fraud. Think about it. That said, the Commission on the Future of North Carolina Elections, sponsored by the Carter Center in partnership with Catawba College, worked throughout last year to talk to voters in an effort to assuage their concerns and help them feel confident in our electoral process. The Commission consisted of both Democrats and Republicans, and now they are ready to present what they've learned from voters to voters. Today, the Commission will meet to discuss their findings and recommendations at Catawba College, and this hour, they give us a preview. Former Republican Justice of the North Carolina Supreme Court, Bob Orr, is co-leader of the commission with former Democratic Mayor of Charlotte, Jennifer Roberts. They are here along with Professor Michael Bitzer, Professor of Politics and History at Catawba College, where later today he will co-host a discussion about this with former PBS NewsHour anchor Judy Woodruff. But in the meantime, he has submitted to slumming with us. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. Welcome.
Morning.
Michael, I'm going to prime you for Judy. Is that okay?
Please. I need all the priming I can get.
Okay. The efforts by the Carter Center to assure American voters that their elections are secure started in 2022, and yet doubts linger. Bob, most Americans never questioned the integrity of our elections, at least not before the Trump era. This country and the Carter Center used to send, and still does send, observers to foreign countries to watch their elections and make sure they are on the up and up. Now they do it here, which is a sad commentary. What has been the driving force in your mind behind the decline in this belief in not just our elections, but our institutions?
Well, when you see a major political figure like President Trump telling his base and the public that there's fraud, there's corruption in the election system, and you hear it over and over and over, and it's amplified through certain news media and the broader party, you know, people who are consuming this start to believe it's really true. And I think we have to step back and realize, though, we have a different election system in each of the states. Each state runs its own system. And, you know, some states do a better job than others. I think we found that, for the most part, North Carolina does a really good job in its election system. But it is complicated. It is sophisticated. It is evolving as we speak. And there's a ton of technology involved. And we all know we don't trust technology.
That's Bob, right. These attacks on our elections, these attacks on the integrity of our elections, the accusations being thrown at them, these attacks on our institutions, these attacks on the media, etc., are coming from your former political party, the Republican Party, at all levels. I'm just curious what the motivation is in your mind and when you began to notice this.
Well, I've been involved with elections in this state probably at least 50 years in one form or another. And I would have to say that, you know, there have always been issues and problems, but on a very small scale and very, very limited. And it's only in this huge internet, social media world where anybody can say anything and it reaches massive audiences that we've seen this distrust, and I think
we're tap dancing around the problem here. Let's get right to the crux of it. Yes, social media plays a role in all this because you have all these yahoos who know nothing and who have their own personal agendas, whether they are political or monetary or whatever they may be, putting forth lies that get clicks and grab attention and make them money. That's one thing. Then you have a political party which has been in existence for 100 years or more, joining the fray. Why?
Because everybody wants to win, because winning elections means power, means power and money. And whether it's in the United States of America or in third world countries or Russia, the ability to control elections and control the outcome of these elections puts your people in power, which can serve your financial interest, your personal agendas, and unfortunately, we've seen over the last 8 or 10 years that the Republican Party, with Trump's leadership, have in fact gravitated to that model of, you know, it's all about winning. And the reason you didn't hear a lot of complaints this go around was because Trump won.
Following the 2020 election, Jennifer, the Associated Press did an exhaustive investigation piece looking for voter fraud in that election. It found fewer than 475 potential instances of voter fraud out of 25 million votes cast. That number would not have changed the outcome of a dog catcher race in eastern Ohio. Donald Trump still insists, with no foundation in fact, that the 2020 election was rigged and stolen. He's backed by the entire Republican Party, many of whom won election that year, but they never contested their own victories for fraud, even though he lost. This election cycle, as Bob just said, Trump won, Democrats lost. There have been no claims of voter fraud or rigging in the national election. How do we stop what is clearly a canard?
Well, it's the question of the hour, isn't it? And Mike, I want to backtrack 1 second in talking about our final report and the work of the last year of the North Carolina Commission on the Future of Elections. We do have a steering committee of 5 people, and Dr. Martha Croft with UNC Charlotte and Dr. Chris Cooper with Western Carolina University are also part of the 5-member steering committee. So I just wanted to make sure we got that in there, because research that a lot of academics have done and professors and institutions have done into the operation of elections has really informed our work and helped us understand the complexity, but also the security of our elections. Back to your question, we are, you know, dealing with quite a lot in the United States right now. And where I find hope, you look at the work of this commission, we had some very strong Republicans on this commission. We had unaffiliated, we had Democrats, we had students, professors, business people, a mix of folks, 60 people from across the state looking at complex issues of elections. And they had great conversations. They had great bipartisan discussions, didn't always agree. There's some issues that at the end of the report, we say, we came to no consensus, but we had a civil conversation. We also did a series of 23 town halls across the state. Again, Republicans, Democrats, unaffiliated folks came to listen, came to ask questions. And we did a survey afterwards. People who listened to the panelists, and they were always a Democrat and a Republican Board of Election member on every panel, at the end, people would say, we were so surprised to hear Republicans and Democrats agreeing on things, because we don't hear that in the media, right? We don't see that out in internet land. And that is something that we are going to try to continue to raise up, that there are ways to have civil discourse and to agree on complex issues. But we do have a lot of issues at the national level.
The reasons behind the formation of this commission and all or committee and all the work that it did, Michael, is pernicious. I mean, sowing seeds of doubt in the integrity of our elections, about the integrity of our institutions, about the integrity of mainstream media is dangerous to democracy. They are the tools of destruction of democracy. It's what authoritarian dictators do, because if you can tell lies enough to instill doubt, when you discredit everything around you and you say it enough and people begin to believe you, you then have the upper hand. Why do you believe this country, which has been a beacon of democracy around the world now for most of its existence, is apparently so vulnerable to this kind of manipulation, this kind of attack?
I think part of it is human psychology. I think part of it is basic fundamental trust. I think part of it is understanding what our fundamental civic character is. I think when it comes to elections, for the most part, probably before 2016, most Americans would think about voting. They would go to their precinct or to an early voting site, fill out their ballot, slide it into the machine, and think nothing else until election night and the results come out. I think what we have seen since 2016 is an attack on the mechanism that makes a democracy work, and that is fundamentally our elections. And understanding the wide nature and the swath of what has to be done to pull off a presidential, midterms, off-year elections, I don't think people fully understand or have been educated on. And when you're not educated on, you tend to revert back to your fundamental belief systems that may or may not be correct. And then if you are challenged with the proper information and facts as they are, you have to wrestle with that. So I think this work that this group has done really does solidify what I say is the basic engine of our democracy, and that is elections. Because if we don't have the system by which the voters and the people can express their voices, we don't have a democratic republic.
We're all looking for simplistic solutions, and they are being offered on a moment-by-moment basis by the man who's sitting in the White House. He's been doing it for 10 years now, and if this is not a simple problem, it's a Byzantine problem, and everything's interconnected, and our politics are broken, our government is broken, and it's broken because it can't cope with 21st century attacks from social media and other things, including the fact that our election system is broken, which we will talk about as we go through this, Jennifer. But if I'm not mistaken, and correct me if I'm wrong, Donald Trump won this election by 1.8% of the popular vote. Far more people in the millions did not participate in this election than voted for either of the two candidates. That's a real problem, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you would hear, we know that since 2020, a number of states have passed laws making it more difficult to vote, requiring more documents, changing district lines. And we heard from a number of people on the left across the country that voter suppression works, that you make things too complicated and people not going to take the time to go back and cure their ballot. You know, they forgot one thing, or their registration didn't include something, and you have time to go back and correct it. But again, people are busy and they're not sure their vote counts. And you're right. It is it's a challenge. It's a challenge when that many people feel left behind.
It also includes problems with the primary system, which we can talk about, and other things. And when we come back, I want to talk about exactly what your committee did and how it did it over the course of the last year. And then we'll go into some of the things that you're recommending, some of the things that you couldn't reach a consensus on, and more. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to the co-leads of the North Carolina Network for Fair, Safe, and Secure Elections. They've spent the last year with others canvassing the state, talking to voters about their fears and concerns surrounding our elections. Bob Orr, former North Carolina Supreme Court Justice, is the co-lead of that organization, along with former Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts. Bob's a former Republican. Jennifer is a Democrat. Dr. Michael Bitzer is unaffiliated. He is a professor of politics and history at Catawba College, and they co-sponsored this along with the Carter Center. Bob, before we talk about your commission's or findings, let's talk about the process. You traveled the state holding smaller meetings with voters about election integrity. Were you teaching them about how the process worked, giving them a behind the voting booth curtain view of how elections work? Or were you simply trying to answer their questions about their concerns about election integrity and the accuracy of those elections?
Well, I think we were trying to do both across the state. And we had local election board members from each party. We would have election directors at the county level. And they were there to explain to people exactly the very technical nuances that go into the election process. It's not simple. And so there was a huge educational component to it. And it was an opportunity for people to come and ask questions. And I will say that the Trusted Election Tour was a separate project from the Election Commission, although they both, you know, tied together in what we were trying to accomplish. But it was something we did in 2022. I'm losing track of years here. And you know, found it very useful for people to learn more.
And as part of this tour where you were talking to voters, I'm just curious who you were talking to. I mean, you had a Democrat and a Republican on every panel, so it was bipartisan. But the people that were coming, were you preaching to the choir, people who already believe in the integrity of our elections, or people who came because, by God, this thing is crooked to its core and we're going to fix it?
Well, to some extent, we were preaching to the choir, but I think consistently across the state, we would have people who had picked up through the news media that we were having this. They would come in out of curiosity, or they had a particular problem. Michael, I don't know whether you want to tell the story of your trustee at the Catawba meeting, but yeah, that may be a worth.
Yeah. When we did in 2022 a town hall in Hickory, I invited a member of the Board of Trustees for Catawba and was talking about how the Carter Center was helping to support this. And I was going to moderate a panel. And he said, "Carter Center, that's got to be, you know, those left wingers, you know, doing this." I said, "Just come and listen." And we had the panel. We had a cybersecurity expert. We had a Democrat and a Republican from their local board of elections. We had the election director come. And they talked about the process, and the room was packed. It was probably one of the largest ones we had in terms of the town hall. And I saw the trustee after, and he came up and said, "I need to apologize to you because I didn't fully understand what all went into running an election." And I think that, to me, doing a number of these town halls, helping out with the Trusted Elections Tour, really shaped the way that I looked at the commission's work to be a source of public education and awareness that I think is fundamentally critical about this topic.
We have the World Book Encyclopedia, the Encyclopedia Britannica, in our pocket. We can find out anything at any time about anyone or everything in the world. Why is it that we don't understand how elections work? Is it that we don't teach this in civics anymore, or we don't teach civics anymore? Or is it the fact that we just need to flood the space with this information so people have knowledge of it? Jennifer?
Well, one of the things we heard from both the audiences and the election directors is that civic education is lacking. And we know that we have a lot of information at our fingertips, but do we search that? And do we know the trusted sources to give us the correct information? And one of the things that we always said at our town halls is, you know that person sitting up there is not an AI. That's a real person who does count your votes, who knows the process. And I tell you, one of the best meetings we had was in a county in Western North Carolina And there was a gentleman who was a Republican member of the board, and he said, I didn't trust our elections. I thought they were like, just totally fraudulent, and they were slanted. And so I signed up to be a board of election member, and I took the training, and I learned all about it, and I've been doing this. And he said, I am a convert. And he was terrific. And he said, all those people who are suspicious, I would recommend that you take the training, that you go through what an election worker has to know about, and all the safety procedures, and all the backup, when the power goes out and all that, all the things that they have to do, and you will understand how safe and secure our system is.
I know that Bob wants to get in on this, but I have to ask, when somebody is a convert, when they suddenly realize everything they thought they knew about elections is wrong, do they question the source of where they got the disinformation about our election system?
I sure would hope so.
Okay, Bob.
Yeah, I think people have to recognize how complicated the process is. We have what, almost 7.8 million registered voters in the state. We have 100 counties ranging from large metropolitan areas that have their own issues to rural counties in this election cycle. We had 25 counties in the West that had been devastated through Hurricane Helene that were trying to run an election in that environment. We have staff that is overworked, underpaid, but has this monumental task of putting on the election and getting it right. And what we found both through the tour, but I think through the work of the commission, is that the men and women, Democrats, Republicans across the state who work in elections either professionally or as appointees, as precinct judges and the like, do an incredible job under very, very difficult circumstances. But the people need to know that. The public needs to know that.
Jennifer, you said that many people who attended were amazed, if that's the right word to use, at the fact that Republicans and Democrats on these panels actually agreed with each other on many points. But you told our producer, Sarah D'Elia, that you were also surprised that so many who were attending from both sides of the aisle found out that they agreed with each other. Talk about that.
Absolutely. When you look at the mechanics of, it's kind of like what they say, there's not a Republican way or a Democratic way to fix a pothole. Well, there's not a Republican way or a Democratic way to have safety and security of your ballots, of your ballot marking machines. Now, there were a few things that there was some discussion about, like early voting. This was really interesting. One of the Democratic members said, we'd love to have every polling site be open for early voting as well. And the Republican said, well, that'd be great for access, but think about how much that would cost. And so, there's a balance in there, but that was a reasonable conversation of here is where, we look at the different aspects and come to a compromise. And the people in the audience, they also, a lot of them hung around afterwards. We had one town hall where three students hung around to register to vote right there because there were people who had registration forms. And the audience also found that when you're sitting together and talking about something that is the basics of a democratic system and the function of it, that there's a lot that you can agree on.
As an educator, Michael, you probably understand how this works, and you get small groups of people and have intelligent discussions with them. The heat gets turned down, and the knowledge that ensues gets turned up. And you may not walk out of the meeting agreeing on everything, but you understand the other side. And that's half the battle, understanding where they are coming from, and in fact, they are not the enemy. But these are small groups that your organization has met with, and it's like, I don't know, spitting into the wind. We're up against a force that is destructive to democracy, and there are actors working toward that end at the highest levels of our government. Right now. And they're going after the media right now, including public radio and public television, the New York Times, NBC News. They're going after us right now. This is right out of an authoritarian playbook. How do you put a dent in that? Because if you control the media, it's over.
Certainly. And I think the power of the free press and the responsibility of a press.
The free press, Michael, is capitulating right now. They have major lawsuits against all three major networks. They're going to settle them.
Then, Mike, take it up with them. What I'm saying is that the fundamental principle of a free press in a democratic republic is to hold themselves accountable and to hold those in power accountable. And unless we have that system, unless the voters decide to participate, as you rightly indicated, more Americans chose not to participate than necessarily voting for one party candidate, presidential candidate over the other. Until we have this civic culture that respects and understands and is willing to be educated to acknowledge, I don't know everything, I need to learn about my system of self-governance, then we won't have self-governance. But it takes work. It takes effort. And if we start at the local level, like we have done, we can then broaden that out, as we have done, to the state. And maybe other states are doing this. Five other states and the Carter Center are having similar initiatives. They're doing their own things, but they're working towards trying to address this polarization that is eating at the fabric of our civic culture.
But that's happening by necessity at a much slower tempo than what's happening right now with the blitzkrieg going on in Washington. And the crisis is more than just confidence in our elections, Jennifer. It's not just mis and disinformation. It's not just lies being spewed by one candidate. It is part of a genuine problem in how government works. Gerrymandering, the primary system, Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision that said corporations were people and that money is speech, all converged to make elected officials less beholden to the voter and more beholden to special interests in and out of their own party. And if you can't fix that, can you really restore confidence in elections? Because if you don't fix that, elections don't matter.
Well, I tell you, Michael, there are quite a few groups that have filed lawsuits against many of the unconstitutional actions that are happening. What I remember is there was a full-page ad in the New York Times right after Donald Trump got elected that said, was from the ACLU, and said, "We are the ACLU. In your first term of office, we brought 436 actions against you. We're here. We're not moving to Canada. We're ready to defend our Constitution." And what people have to understand is that there are groups there that are monitoring this, that are taking action. One thing I would say about the media, I'm getting more and more newsletters that are by independent thinkers, not connected to any major news source. I would encourage people to sign up for those. And they always have a little thing at the bottom, help pay for this so I can keep going because I don't get, you know, public funding or corporation funding. I would encourage people to do that, to find, you know, some news and support it by paying for those subscriptions, because we absolutely need to have that free media. But there are people gathering, there are people at the national level. And as Michael said, there are five other states that are working on this depolarization with support from the Carter Center, with the experience they bring. You know, the person who has been directing this at the Carter Center has experience from working in the Middle East. And we are hopeful, but you're right. And Michael's right. It's going to take a lot of work. Democracy is not a spectator sport.
Bob, right now, we have a dispute in North Carolina about which candidate won the open seat at your old job on the North Carolina Supreme Court. Democrat incumbent Allison Riggs, after several bipartisan recounts, remains ahead of her Republican challenger, Judge Jefferson Griffin, by 734 votes. Griffin, as is his right, has found every way possible to challenge the outcome of that election, including requesting that 60,000 votes be thrown out. Then he focused on 5,000 votes from mostly Democratic areas. Now he's homed in on about 500 votes cast by people he says never lived in North Carolina, and who never lived in the United States. And there are those people, and they are legally allowed to vote in our elections because they are citizens of the United States and have a tie to North Carolina. But he wants them gone. As best as we can tell, these are legal votes. Nonetheless, in your mind, are these attempts legitimate, or is this another power grab?
Well, being one who always favors innovative and creative legal theories, I don't want to say that, you know, there's nothing to it. There were issues involving each of these particular pools of voters. The interesting thing is, in one of the iterations at the North Carolina Supreme Court, Republican Justice Richard Dietz invoked the Purcell Doctrine, which says, yeah, okay, if you think there's a legal problem with this particular pool of voters, you don't bring it after the election and after it looks like you've lost. If you want to deal with a question as to the validity of the registration or the validity of people to vote, you don't do it in the middle of an election. And one of the interesting things in this, I mean, I really think this litigation strategy that you're seeing play out in the Supreme Court race was really put in place long before the election in case Trump needed it in a narrow loss in North Carolina. And then they would have been using this litigation strategy to try and tip the North Carolina votes for him.
But these manipulations, you can call them legal strategies, and candidates have a right to do this up to a point. But at some point, you have to say, I lost or I won, and move on. But these seem to undermine confidence, not only in our elections, but in the courts. Because if this stays in the Fourth Circuit Court, the federal court, he is likely to lose. But if it goes to the Supreme Court in the state, he is likely to win. Now, what does that tell voters? And I have 40 seconds.
Well, it plays on the cynicism of the message that the courts, federal or state, are ripe with political decisions as opposed to independence. And I think that's a real problem. I mean, there are so many problems with the litigation that, you know, we don't have enough time to do it. But, you know, all we can hope is the judges remember their oath. Justice Dietz did in his dissent a few weeks ago.
Okay, we have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some of the solutions that this committee came up with, and it's some of the things that they couldn't reach a consensus on, and we'll plow through those. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. The Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're here with former State Supreme Court Justice Bob Orr, a former Republican, and Jennifer Roberts, a Democrat and a former mayor of Charlotte. They were the co-leads for the North Carolina Network for Fair, Safe, and Secure Elections, which canvassed the state over the last several years, talking to voters about the integrity of our election. It's a project of the Carter Center and in cooperation with Catawba College, and that is where they will be unveiling the results of their study today. And later on tonight, Dr. Michael Bitzer, a professor of politics and history at Catawba College, will have a conversation with the former host of PBS NewsHour, Judy Woodruff, about what their findings were and more. And so my function today, Michael, is to ask the questions Judy will not.
Actually, it's the reverse. So she's going to be on that. But I her pain right now. So
you partnered at Catawba College with the commission with the political scientists, Dr. Chris Cooper, who's been mentioned, from Western Carolina University, and Dr. Martha Croft from UNC Charlotte, also a political scientist there, to help develop these sessions that took place across the state over the course of the last year. And the committee has now produced a 150-page book of findings. The report says, quote, true to its cross-partisan nature, the commission was not able to reach consensus on some of the more controversial aspects of election administration. What would some of those aspects be?
So, for example, we had a committee that looked at candidate filing, and the group couldn't really reach a consensus regarding unaffiliated candidates. You know, we talk about Typically, the two major parties, perhaps Libertarians, Greens, Constitution Party candidates, but we've never had, true independent candidates. They've been rare in terms of getting onto the ballot because oftentimes the requirements are exceedingly tough for them to get onto the ballot. So the committee, kind of looked into that, wrestled with it, dealt with it, couldn't really come to a consensus about access for independent, unaffiliated candidates, even though among, as Bob mentioned, the 7.8 million registered voters, a plurality of North Carolina voters are registered unaffiliated. So that was just one example. There are others about ranked choice voting, for example, among the counting votes, issues about mail-in ballots, some of the intricacies there. So the group reflects American and I think North Carolina society in that there's not always going to be consensus on some of these tough details of our election administration system.
But even if they had reached a consensus on how to best get independent candidates who are not affiliated as a Democrat or a Republican onto the ballot, even if they could have reached a consensus on reforming the redistricting process and eliminating at least much of the gerrymandering that we've experienced here and in other states around the country, even if they did that, you have no power. Would the legislature, who has the power, have listened to your recommendations?
Go ahead, Bob.
No, I was going to say, and this I think is one of the important points, is that nobody, I've been practicing law 50 years, nobody in my knowledge has done anything like this in the state of North Carolina over this period of time. Not governmental entities, not academic entities. And so what we want to do is start the conversation. And elections are going to happen every election cycle, every year.
Every year.
So whether it's local, state, federal. And so the commission, by pointing out unresolved issues, controversies like how do you draw districts in a fair and free way, we couldn't come up with our resources answers to everything. And like you say, it requires legislative action. But with nobody doing this, we felt like it was an important mission, and Catawba College has been a huge partner in this, to get this report out there and get a variety of groups across the political spectrum talking about the issues and the unresolved problems in the election system. Like, how do you fund it? Right now, local boards of elections are funded by counties, which may not have the resources or the inclination to put proper technology, to pay staff, to actually give us a really good system. So go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, again, that I think the average voter doesn't realize is that counties individually fund elections. And we had a couple of challenges this past year. For example, taking RFK, Kennedy's name off the ballot, technically after the law said that it should have been changed, and it delayed things by 2 weeks. 2.5 million ballots had already been printed, and each of the counties that had printed ballots had to figure out how to fund printing new ballots. And of course, we also know the hurricane disaster led counties to have to do a lot of challenges, new things to deal with finding places to vote early and election day. And again, counties had to find that money. They did have some support from the state for the hurricane relief, but a lot of those small counties were like, I don't know where we're going to find the money to print, those ballots over again. So these are things that can be addressed. We did talk to the North Carolina Association of County Commissioners in 2023. We will certainly bring this report to them so that county commissioners can understand the importance of that line item in their budget. I've been a county commissioner, and I know that election, before 2016, we kind of took it for granted that the election folks would ask for the money they needed and we give it to them. Well, we're going to raise some more awareness about how complicated that actually is.
Why aren't elections funded by the state? Why isn't some money for elections funneled from the federal government into this process? Because it's not just paying workers, it is buying these voting machines, ensuring that they are accurate and fair and untouched by the internet, and that they're counted accurately, et cetera, and that does cost money.
Well, the state has some functions. There is somebody at the state level who is doing cybersecurity. There's a whole team of folks who are looking at security threats and helping with software adjustments and upgrades, testing it, verifying it. The state does check and verify each of the voting machines. But because of that expense, you're right, not every county has electronic, voting machines. Some of them are just your paper.
And it isn't just the technology that we interface with while we're in the voting booth. These monies, these extra funds that you say we need, are for things like increased physical security at elections offices, at election workers' homes. This is the United States. Why are we talking about this? More money for security gates and fencing and personal security training and personal information protections, because these people, some of these workers, have been doxxed by people who think the elections are unfair. Yep. Help me understand how we got here. This is the United States, not some third world banana republic.
Well, and I tell you, election workers, I think almost three quarters of them said they felt threatened, harassed, intimidated. They were worried about what would happen during elections. And, now we have, 1,500 former insurrectionists who are out there in the community.
Yes.
Who feel like they have immunity.
And Bob, this is coming from the right, your former party, which seems to support you-know-who in everything he says or does, and he just released these criminals onto the streets, these dangerous people, most of whom pled guilty to insurrection and harming police officers and destruction of property, etc. They're out there.
Right.
And now you've got Elon Musk, who has access to everybody's personal information in the country. God knows what he's going to do with it or where it's going to go. What would you say to your former fellow Republicans about this activity?
Well, how many more hours do we have on the show, Mike?
As long as you want, I'll take this into the noon hour.
Well, seriously, right? If you believe in law and order, it isn't selective law and order. It's supposed to be applicable to people who have attacked police officers, tried to overthrow an election. But if I could circle back for a second to an issue that deals with both funding, trust, and litigation. And that is one of the problems in the Griffin Riggs race was that after election night, Griffin had a lead. But then his provisional ballots and absentee ballots were counted over the next several days, the margins shifted and Justice Riggs had the lead. And so part of the mistrust is, how could that be? And this was something we saw in the Trump 2020 election. So now we're hearing from really thoughtful people, we ought to be able to have every vote counted by the end of election night, which is staggering when you look at the logistics of doing that. And even if you want to try, somebody's got to put the staffing and money and resources into making it happen.
And you have to allow it to happen, because there are some states that will not allow absentee ballots to be counted until after the polls close, when in fact they could have been counted days before the polls even opened on election day. Why can't we standardize that to take some of the mystery out of the results?
Because we have a 50-state election administration system. Yes, the federal government puts parameters on how states can conduct their elections, but in general, in our federal system, it is each state operates individually and to its own rules and regulations. And so, if we want federalization, if we want standardization, Congress can do it. But the states are where elections happen.
But Michael, this was never a problem. This never used to be a problem. It's always been this way. And suddenly it's a problem. Why?
because people have sorted themselves into their tribalistic camps. And when my candidate wins, everything is wonderful. The system worked perfectly. When my candidate loses, by God, there had to be a problem. And,
Well, Jennifer,
I
that's
don't
not
know
true.
how to deal with it. I'm not
Jennifer,
a
that's only
person.
true. Excuse me,
So
that's
I'm
only.
not going to be able to tell you exactly
All
what the
right.
human mind is thinking.
Michael, I have to jump in here because that is only true on one side of the aisle. Jennifer, you're a Democrat. Kamala Harris lost. Not a peep. She conceded.
Yeah. Well, and so did Cherry Beasley, and so did Al Gore, right? And that's what, one of the principles the Carter Center puts out in its basic democratic principles is after the votes are counted and the recounts are done, the legal thing, you concede, you accept the results. And we actually, in 2022, we had some candidates sign on to say they would accept the results. We found that there wasn't really anybody who was really openly talking about the stolen election during their candidacy, and so it didn't garner a lot of attention in 2022. But absolutely, there are people who've written op-eds saying, I lost fair and square, I conceded. That's the hallmark of democracy: peaceful transfer of power. You follow the rules apply to you, and they apply to everyone else. We should all accept that and not flood the airwaves with conspiracy theories that disrupt our belief in every institution.
And Mike, if I could jump in, we asked in last August in a YouGov poll of North Carolinians, how important is it that you think losing candidates to publicly accept the winning candidates as legitimate winners? 84% in August of North Carolinians said that was very or somewhat important. We ran the exact same question just last month. That number went up to 91%. So the people of North Carolina understand that it is important that there are winners and that there are losers. And we have to, for the integrity and confidence in the system, be willing to say, hey, my candidate didn't get enough votes than the other guy or gal. We lost. We'll fight again in the next battle because that's what elections are.
Very quickly, Bob, several of your committees advocated for improving voter accessibility, meaning that they want to make voting easier, particularly for those who face unique challenges. And this flies in the face of what many members of your party appear to be trying to do here and around the country as they find new and novel ways to erect barriers to voting in the name of, quote, election integrity, end quote. How do you fix that?
Well, I think you fix it through public discourse and advocacy by people talking about a long history in this country of repressing voters. I mean, just take the Jim Crow era for what, 70, 80 years. And so, I mean, there is a philosophical question. How open should we? When I first voted, you had to be 21. Now it's 18. So it is a public discussion with media folks like you, with academic folks like Michael, and civic groups like the Carter Center, all talking about, okay, who should vote for these elections?
Well, yeah, and I think what people don't realize is we heard this from somebody who works with disability rights, and a lot of people who are elderly don't have, the control over their hand. They need assistance. They need access, not just, absentee voting, but also early voting and day of election voting. And there are Republicans and Democrats who fall in that category. So I think part of it is educating legislators about who falls in that category and that it hurts everyone if people don't have access. If you don't have people included in the democratic process, you don't get the best government.
So I have 30 seconds. What happens to the result of this report now, and what happens to the North Carolina Network for Fair, Safe, and Secure Elections now?
Well, we're going to make a big announcement at our event today, but we are going to be working with Catawba College to transition all the work we've been doing under Michael Bisser's new center.
For North Carolina Politics and Public Service.
So the work continues.
We'll have to have you back then, Michael, to grill you some more about this.
I'd be honored to sit in the hot seat yet again.
And go easy on Judy. She's a nice person. Leave her alone. Michael Bitzer is a professor of politics and history at Catawba College. Jennifer Roberts, former Charlotte mayor, and Bob Orr, former member of the North Carolina Supreme Court, a justice on that court, both co-leads for the North Carolina Network for Fair, Safe, and Secure Elections. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. We have production help from Gene Davis, Chris Jones, and Jesse Steinmetz. For information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.